Christy's pickup finally crapped out in the desert around 25 miles on the other side of Milan, well beyond the sand-drifted ruins of the larger ville called Grants. It just coughed twice, flat died, and coasted to a stop. Christy didn't waste breath on cursing the wag or her fate, nor did she bother raising the hood. She had no idea how to repair it. She had been lucky to get her hands on the wag in the first place, much less nurse it this far. She had still lost ground on her quarry. Magog traveled fast when it had intact rails, as apparently it had from the slave camp onward. While the road mostly still existed, especially once she'd reached what had been I-40, it was busted here and washed out there, and drifted hopelessly over with dunes someplace else. She hadn't been able to get the wag above 40 miles per hour in the best of stretches, not without the thing setting up a nasty shuddering and chattering that she didn't have to be a mechanic to know couldn't possibly bode well. What with the stretches of even worse road, which were most of them, frequent detours, and the odd false start, she knew she'd been unable to average better than 20, 25 miles an hour, immeasurably better than traveling by Shanksmere. She had reached Milan just before dark the previous day. The little ville, which consisted of a handful of pre-dark ruins and a number of squat adobe structures built afterward, was surrounded by a living hedge of some kind of mutant maguey or yucca plants. These sprouted long, slim spines, all the way up to 12 or 15 feet in length, arching away from the plant's core. These stirred and shifted to point to her as Christy's wag approached on the dirt track that led from the old blacktop. The guards, who pulled aside a barrier made from an old wag chassis and waved her inside, looked tense and drawn. She wondered if they feared attack, but soon learned they had been hit with a freak chem storm that morning. Magog had pulled into town shortly after. The train's personnel had provided emergency medical service to the stricken townsfolk. Several lives had been saved, the wounded succored. Supplies of antibiotics and analgesics had been left for them. In exchange, all they had asked was to top their tank cars with fresh water, which the ville had in abundance. The townies, in short, thought the general and all his people walked on water. By nature an outgoing person, Christy had learned as a child how to play things close to her chest. She merely grunted and nodded. She kept her own opinion of the general and her experience at the hands of his sekmen strictly to herself. The people wouldn't have believed her anyway. People believe what they see. She was just a red-headed stranger from the West, well-armed but polite. Who was she to go running down their benefactors? All she could do was attract ill will. She didn't need that. She understood a body's need for sleep as a healer did, and understood that she had to take care of herself to do what she had to do. If possible, she needed to sleep the night in the relative security of the ville. She traded some of the tools she'd brought from the traveler's caravan for a night on a cot in the back room of Sawtell's Possibles, a sort of general store. The room stank from the carcasses of numerous small animals and game birds, some of which Christy was sure were mutants and not natural creatures at all, which had been hung to soften up and lose some of the edge from their gamey taste. She ignored it. Information, meager enough, she got simply by listening to locals sitting over mugs of rank-smelling local beer, once or twice interjecting a brief pointed question. No, the locals had no idea where Magog was headed, other than east. They reckoned likely it was somewhere beyond Burke on the Big River, past the Sandia Mountains that rose just to the east of there. That meant the armored train was headed into the Great Plains, into the belly of the Deathlands. Christy did learn that one of the two healers who had done most of the work was a stocky black woman who could only be Mildred Wyeth. That filled Christy with a sense of relief, so vibrant and foolish, she almost smiled. At least one of her friends was alive. It boded well for the others. That night, she slept without dreaming. In the morning, she ate a breakfast of bacon and fresh hen's eggs, paid for with 3 cartridges. Outside, the sky was clear and the sun warm. She noticed a wizened old woman shaking what she took to be a rattle, made from an old can on the end of a short stick, and a white-faced heifer, and a small child with scabbing over burns on arms and face. The child then guided the cow toward the thorn wall by switching at its haunches with the long central stalk of a yucca. Christy loaded her pack into the truck and paused to watch as beast and boy came up to the hedge of thorns. The thorns began to stir, as they had when Christy neared them in her truck. But instead of rotating their needle tips toward the child and the cow, as they had for her, the plants turned the spines away. The two were able to pass through without harm, simply brushing past the shanks of the spines.
Interesting.
Christy looked around for the old woman, who had vanished into one of the buildings of the settlement. Rather than a rattle, the object she had shaken over the boy and his charge had to have been a dispenser, containing some substance that gave them safe passage through the wicked thorns. Christy suspected it was the pollen of the muty thorn plant itself. Shaking her head, Christy got into her wag and drove on. She'd never know, and she felt a pang of regret at that. The eastern gate was another truck bed weighted down with lava boulders and chunks of concrete, which the sentries obligingly rolled out of her path. 2 hours later, the wag engine choked and croaked. She was on her feet again. From the divide, the declining land had run from mountains forested in pine and fir to undulating hills dotted with scrubby trees, and then back to plain upper Sonoran cactus and bunchgrass desert, with wind-cut mesas rising above and arroyos like gashes of a giant knife below. The pavement here was clear and relatively intact. With bitter irony, which she did no more than allow her mind to brush over, she noted that she could have made the best speed so far had her wag survived. Ryan's mentor and longtime employer Trader used to say that a man who cried over spilt milk was blinded by his tears. And women too. But Christy hadn't needed Trader to teach her that. At the moment, the breeze was from the mountains behind her, as cool and fresh as a drink of water from a mountain stream, flavored with a hint of pine. She drank it in, drew sustenance from Gaia's sweet breath. Then she shouldered her pack and marched east, not knowing where her quarry was, nor if it was even remotely possible she could catch it. Her quest was all. Vengeance was all.
Ah, real coffee. Mother's milk.
Mildred shook her head and drank down the aroma from her mug with a mobile anti-guerrilla operations group logo on the side, as if it were as substantial and stimulating as the bitter black brew itself. It probably wasn't near fresh. Likely, it had been irradiated and sealed away in nitrogen-filled containers while she was still walking around in the 20th century, oblivious to the impending end of the world. But it was still coffee and delicious. She shook her head again, enjoyed the sound and feel of the wooden beads strung in her thin braids, rattling together. She'd had a hot shower that afternoon, before the railway pulled out of Milan. The wonders of the fusion power cells and the lead and trail engines. A shy healer named Alicia had helped her plait and bead her hair when it was dry. Life on this train was a lot like civilization.
And that's the pure bitch of it.
She remembered how she came to be here. She made herself remember. It would be sheer betrayal of her martyred father's memory to make peace with the men who had enslaved her. No reason she couldn't enjoy the truce, though. She felt the presence, just at the border of her personal space. She knew who it was without looking. He seemed to radiate some kind of energy. Or maybe it was just a cloud of male pheromones affecting a healthy human female in her sexual prime. Reluctant to give too much away, she made herself raise her head and look him in the eye.
Is there something I can help you with, Captain?
Mildred, may I join you?
I'm hardly in a position to refuse, now am I?
Helton's brow furrowed. He looked like a little boy puzzled by an adult's response. Puzzled and hurt.
Of course you are. I'd never presume to intrude.
She goggled at him. She couldn't help it. She wanted to blurt out, "Are you for real?" She kept it down. She was a woman who prided herself on never bending the knee. But survival instinct imposed some constraint on her behavior, or else she'd never have lived this long since Ryan and the rest had awakened her from her cryo-sleep tube. She nodded. He pulled out a chair and sat. Outside, the night rushed past. Even though the lights were dim in the officer's mess car, reflection blanked out the stars, or even whether they were obscured or not by overcast. Alicia had mentioned that the railwag wasn't rolling at anywhere near its top cruising speed of 70 miles per hour. It wouldn't until it crossed the mountains east of the Grandee and hit the giant, gently tilted tabletop of the plains.
I wanted to commend you for the excellent work you did, both after the bandit attack and at the Ville today. Healer Singh speaks very highly of you.
That was nice of her.
My name's Helton, by the way. Mark Helton.
I know who you are, Captain.
Again, that schoolboy frown of consternation. To her, he looked about 16, maybe 18 tops. Although she knew that was mainly just her early middle-aged perspective. In another 10 years, everyone under 30 would look 14 to her. Still, he probably wasn't much older than that. Kids matured quick in the Deathlands, if at all. And she realized that for all of that, for all his responsibility and the heroic status he enjoyed among Magog's personnel, he was in ways very young indeed. Danger, Will Robinson, danger! She could not let this man, her enslaver, murderer of innocents, including her beloved friend, become too much of a person in her mind. She understood now, in a way she never had, why combatants throughout history had traditionally dehumanized their foes. Suddenly, it didn't seem as despicable to her as it always had.
You seem reserved with me, Mildred.
Do I?
She stood up.
Maybe I'm unduly influenced by the circumstances of our first meeting, Captain. Now, if you'll kindly excuse me, it's been a long day.